Youngstown State University Oral History Program, Army Reservist Recall Vietnam, an interview with Mr. Richard Van Horn. Mr. Van Horn, what time were you in Vietnam?
It was April 1965, for the next 6 months.
I see. And how did you come about going into Vietnam? Were you drafted or did you volunteer?
No, I was stationed at Okinawa as a switchboard repairman, and they needed my expertise in that area in Vietnam. There's TDY status, and I volunteered for the duty.
So you were in the Signal Corps then?
Yes, sir.
I see. When your family and friends heard that you were going to Vietnam, can you tell me what their reaction was?
Mostly concern for the fact that I was going to Vietnam, although it was early in the game. There was quite a bit of concern, especially for my family, about going to Vietnam. I had several letters right close together, and that was unusual, and they voiced that concern pretty much.
I see. Can you describe to me what was going through your mind, or how you felt when you got off the plane and hit Vietnam?
I don't know, that's hard to describe in a way that there was, even from the time that I said I would go down there for that duty, there was a great sense of obligation, a great sense of duty that I had felt, and I thought I was going to miss that. So in a way it was kind of like a feeling of elation where I was doing something that I felt needed done to myself as a part of my call to the country.
I see. When you first got in country, what was the atmosphere like when you arrived?
Much different than anything I was used to. It was loose. Of course, the weather conditions were extremely hot. I wasn't ready for that. But the morale of the troops seemed to be high. Everything that I had been used to up to that point was geared to strict discipline as far as the body's concerned, the uniform's concerned, but it was looser. You didn't have so much of that strictness showing down there. So it was altogether different from what I had been used to, but it was something that I liked. I liked the atmosphere that they showed. That's a difficult thing to describe. It was more like you're not in the Army situation as it was, you're a part of the family now situation. And I like that.
I see. Did you have much contact with the Vietnamese people themselves?
Just the Southern Vietnamese people. I met them quite a bit. They worked as civilians in the compound. Of course, we were just located outside of Saigon, which we made several trips down there, and we got to know some of the people. One man in particular was a Vietnamese sergeant of the Southern Vietnamese Forces. We talked with him a lot and became pretty close friends.
How would you say from what you saw, that the South Vietnamese Army functioned? Were they good soldiers?
It would seem to me like that they were good as far as they were being led, but it would seem they lacked a lot of knowledge on how to do things, as long as they were being led and instructed as to how to do things, they were good. But it seemed like without the American people there, either as advisors or in some kind of capacity, they kind of fell apart.
How about in the American Army, along these same lines? Can you describe to me what the leadership was like? What I'm trying to say is, from the folklore that came out of the Vietnam War, we have images of the 90-day wonder lieutenant who usually got fragged or didn't last very long.
I don't know. I don't really get that impression of the leadership. I felt like it was, the leadership was good. You learned. You went through a period of time where you learned about the country, and you learned to be a leader. And a good leader would listen, especially to the people that had been there for a while. And I'd noticed that they were doing this to some extent too. So I felt that the leadership down there was good.
And does the Army of the 60s differ greatly from the Army of the 80s, from what you've been able to observe?
There's been a lot of changes over the last 20 years. Especially the changes I noticed more than anything else is the lack of discipline among the troops. I always felt that this discipline was what made a good outfit. If you went into a battle or you went into a war, you went into a war zone, I felt that good discipline is what caused the men to follow you and do what they were supposed to. I wonder today about some of the people that we might have to follow into a battle, or that might have to follow us into a battle because of this lack of discipline that the Army has.
But you're saying then that in Vietnam era, it was a much more disciplined outfit, or I should say discipline was on everybody's mind then.
I believe it was higher, yes. I think it was noticeably higher back at that time. And even though that in Vietnam itself it was looser, you knew that the discipline was there. I think more out of necessity than anything else.
Can you describe to me how you lived in Vietnam, your living conditions?
Well, I personally didn't much care for the living conditions, but it was something that we accepted. We lived in what they called a Quonset hut, which was more or less just a metal building with a rounded roof. All of us were shoved into one hut together. It was in the platoon or in the section, as we were. And it was crowded. Recreation was pretty much nil as far as having things to do to occupy your time when you were off. The food in the mess halls, I didn't feel that was up to the standard that we have in today's Army. I think that's another area that we've differed, although it's bettered itself. I think the food is a lot better today than it was then. Living conditions, they weren't good, but they were accepted of the troops, and it was about what everybody expected to live, and that's, we did it. We just lived that way.
Did you notice a problem with alcoholism or drug abuse while you were there?
I don't know where you classified a problem at, but it was relevant. There was a lot of alcohol, a lot of drug use. I don't know what point in a person's life that becomes a problem. I've seen alcohol go to the extremes in people where it caused extremely dangerous situations. That would be certainly a problem. I think it's just, back then it was like it is in everybody's life today. Some people could handle it, some people couldn't. Some people abused it extensively and others didn't. But those few that did created some hazards and problems for those that were around them. So alcohol and drugs were relevant at that time. They were widely known.
I see. Can you describe to me what your unit itself was like, your buddies? How did they feel about the war?
They were down home people. They were down to earth. We had a good camaraderie among the people that in the repair section among the whole building. Like I mentioned earlier, it was, you know, more like a family than anything else. You lived with these people, you worked with them, you tried to help them through their problems. In particular, probably one of my closest friends was a young 17-year-old boy, and I say that because he came straight from home to basic to Vietnam. The lack of experience made him young in a lot of ways. It was almost like a brother-to-brother relationship, and we tried to help him through his problems, his loneliness, his things that he would run across being away from home for the first time and having a place like that. I think the people were great. Everybody looked out for each other. If one person had a problem, it was like everybody had one. So, yeah, I don't know. It's difficult to describe unless you use the old family term that we use so often anymore. It's just like part of the family.
Very tightly knit, then.
Very tightly knit, yes. If, another instance, somebody got into trouble one time, and the years take names away from me, but the entire section rose up to go down and retaliate on this particular problem where he had run across what they called street cowboys, which was just another name of a gang, a Vietnamese gang that run the streets. So everybody rose up to retaliate. So there, again, you have that close-knit family-type situation.
Can you relate to me what your most memorable moment was during the war?
I don't know. I don't know if I had a most memorable moment or not. Going down there and feeling like that I was doing something that I should have been doing. Had I not done that, I think I would have carried a regret with me all my life. I don't know if you classify that as memorable or not. Maybe the whole tour would be memorable. There's a sense of pride there because I can stand among the rest of them and say that I did my duty at a time when it was needed. And I think if that was ever needed again, we have a lot of young men who would rise up and do the same thing out of a sense of obligation or sense of duty. I can't pick out a singular thing. I think I would just have to say maybe the whole tour of duty.
You indicated earlier that you'd been to Saigon. Could you describe this for me?
It was much like any of our American cities that we might see, except it was in a Vietnamese location. It was parts of it were nice, clean. Parts of it were had the ghetto sections in it. I recall that they had one of the finest zoos that I can ever remember being to. We visited that several times. They had all different kinds of animals. They had nice shrubbery. The atmosphere was great. The scenery around the zoo was great. It was well kept. It was clean. They had sections of the more wealthy Vietnamese people that was real nice. So it was just like any American city you might visit, except it had Vietnamese people.
How do you believe that the war in Vietnam changed you, or did it change you at all?
I think it gave me a sense of being able to handle responsibility. I think it was a period of time when I grew up in life, and that's something we wait for all youngsters to grow up and to accept responsibility to reach adulthood. And I think that happened. I think that it was thrown at me that I had to take responsibility and to accept it. And I think that was probably the thing that changed my life more than anything.
When you came home from, what kind of a homecoming did you get from the American? people. We hear a lot of servicemen saying that when they came back, the reaction was everything from being totally ignored to having run-ins with protesters. How did you experience your return?
It was more like the ignore. There was nothing. There was no great banners flying and flag waving when I came home. I came home to a little old country town that had less than 100 people in it. And when I would meet them, they would greet me and wish me well and glad I was to be home. But other than that, there was nothing great.
Did you have any trouble readjusting after the war?
No, I don't think I did. I think I just moved right back into society without any problems. I think I was fortunate I didn't notice any or have any problems that some of the other people had.
Why did you join the Army Reserve after going through Vietnam?
There was a sense of something that I missed. I'm not sure that I fully understand it myself, but after I had taken a break in service for about 5 years, I kept thinking about the armed forces, and I kept thinking about there was just something, there was a part of my life that was missing. And I was approached one day about enlisting in the reserve program. I gave it a lot of serious thought, and I thought maybe that's the part of my life that's missing, that seems to be empty, and I can fulfill that again by being a part of the program. And that was the biggest reason that I enlisted.
Well, it's been 10 years since Saigon fell to the North Vietnamese forces. When you see news footage of the communist tanks rolling into the city, how do you feel inside? Do you feel it was all a waste of time, or do you think it was a just cause?
I feel like it was a great sense of loss. I felt like pulling out when we did was the wrong thing to do, that we had spent a large amount of dollars, a large amount of lives, a large amount of time in fighting a war that I fully believed in. I always felt that they were using Vietnam as a stepping stone to get just another hold on communism. And as it turned out, once we pulled out, that happened. I feel like that there's a great sense of loss whenever I think about that or watch the footages, that we pulled out too soon, that we should have stuck with it and went ahead and won the war if that was what was necessary. I think we won as long as we were there, but then we quit too soon.
I see. Well, thank you for granting me this interview. It's been very interesting. Youngstown State University Oral History Program, Army Reservists Recall Vietnam. An interview with Mr. Roy P. Boring. Mr. Boring, this interview that I'm doing with you is a bit different from the rest I've done, because with you, I intend to deal with the home front during the Vietnam conflict. You were in the Army during the war, correct?
Yes.
About what time was this?
June 72 to July 75.
Okay. What did you do when you were in the Army?
Basic training. Maryland, Fort Meade, Maryland, and was attached to the 209th Military Police Company. Just got back from Vietnam, 519th and Military Police Battalion, tactical military police unit. Functioned there for approximately 6 months, and I was reassigned to the 526th Military Police Company under the furlough. Back to this Virginia.
Okay, Mr. Boring, you mentioned the fact that you apprehended AWOLs and deserters from the Army. Can you relate me one of your most memorable instances?
What was memorable? As a guy was down in English, West Virginia, down in Dow County. And we had a little coal mine shack before we get to the valley. Come to find out, he was a paraplegic. So we made arrangements to take him out of the valley and transport him over to the Waterbury Hospital, where an ambulance was waiting for Baltimore International Airport. Come to find out, the guy was a paraplegic, and just didn't want to get involved.
When you apprehended deserters or AWOLs, did any of them tend to get violent with you?
We had several that was violent. As a matter of fact, statistically, AWOL desertion, depending on what the status they were put on, really did on murder. It's a very high violent rate. Usually we sit down and explain to them the status of their son or daughter. We had usually acquired 100% cooperation from them.
What type of excuses did the AWOLs or the deserters give you?
Well, the usual. Duress. Had a multitude of, and a lot of others,
course, a lot of it had to do with being scared, not knowing. And I just used about every excuse in the world. I went down to the back. I was scared. News releases at the time, so it's coming back.
What would usually happen to one of these types of individuals once they were apprehended?
Okay, I had the great fortune when I was in Fort Meade, when I was 2 and 9 captain. So I worked 9 weeks of road duty, 9 weeks of stockade, and I guess we were all in this part of the 9 weeks of school. And while we rotated on these bases, I had the opportunity to work in stockade, and one of my jobs in stockade was to deliver prisoners. His whole contention in court was his dad had come in he's a very hard working man, had a cane, something to say. He had a sister on him, was a pair basket case, actually had a carrier, had a mother that was blind. Whole proceedings, they had nothing but officers for the jury, and very hard stern. Of course, the judge was a federal judge, the same judge who heard the Cowan incident from Vietnam. And proceedings went on with the prosecutor, in other words, the JAG officer. Believe it or not, the jury, when you look at the jury, you have to realize these fellows or these men are being very stern, strict, strapped, very tact individuals. And the whole proceedings, I never seen one quiver, one smile, or one tear. And so anyways, prosecutor done a half decent job. Jury deliberated, they stood out and deliberated. They were all cool. believe such a decision. Can't believe such a decision. He says, I wouldn't appeal this decision before the post commander, which is the proper procedure, and ask for it to be overturned. So it was sort of a shock to hear, not the defendant's attorney up with an objecting, of course that came later, but the prosecutor standing up and objecting for doing such an excellent job in his own case. So, in the same token, you know, I looked at these other men and they wore ribbon battle ribbons, every one of them. And they were dressed in greens. And so they'd all been getting on with their veterans. And I'm sure that in their own minds, they're looking at their own people who have been sacrificed their own lives. So I'm looking at their standpoint too, you know. That they probably see enough blood and guts to last them all their life. So all these other measures come up, it's pretty much meaningless to them. You know, I'd say they already made their decisions, but at the same time, you know, everybody had sacrifices. Some had sacrificed more. I think this, I think the whole contention of the juror was the fact that a lot of them had to go over there or they would leaving their loved ones behind, even under such desolate times. And were willing to sacrifice their lives. That's, you know, I mean, so that's how the trial went. But as Vietnam started to close out, I started to see a bigger trend where the prisoners weren't taking them straight to the stockade. They were taking them to an in-and-out processing center, which was similar to a stockade, but there was a lot more for their freedom of movement. This freedom of movement meant that they could get passes. From one building to another without escort. They had the right to go to the commissary or the PX. And of course, their pay programs weren't hindered. Although they didn't receive the full pay. And they were out of visitation and so forth without any kind of monitoring. So this is what they call in that process. So I start to see the stockade, start seeing the veterans going from the stockade area. Before we started moving to the in-and-out processing area, although they were deserters or AWOLs in the Vietnam era. And of course, they were processed out, usually rapidly. And some of them even gave them an opportunity to pick up their uniforms and head back to the rank and file. But the opportunity was given to some.
Going on to something a little bit more different. What were the feelings about the whole war in general in the stateside army?
Well, I was down at Fort Gordon, Georgia, my training, military police school. This is when actress Jane Fonda and her group of radicals, Tom Hayden, had visited our post. This is when I, as an old country boy, started to become familiar with the various organizations that existed. I didn't go where they were speaking. I didn't believe them, so I didn't go. From what I heard, they had a very large gathering of our own soldiers and were pressing propaganda about our soldiers and time it was ordered to make sure that she was thrown off the post. I suppose Commander has that right. So before they could arrest her, she had disappeared along with several of her comrades. While I was defending,
what was the general consensus of the troops?
Well, we lost a few guys. They were scared. Some definitely had no attention on it because the time draft was active. Believe it or not, the draftees were better soldiers. I didn't feel I was enlisted. Draftees knew that they were in. Census error was, first off, the military got an excellent job in preparing us for it, at least I felt it did. So the majority, with the exception of a few, was very aggressive. They're probably looking forward to being involved. And from the period that was in, decision time for the president doesn't go right for all troops or we can see the general's movement and introduce more troops. Plus the fact that news was very slow getting to us and we had blackout periods. That was the same with AIT. AIT was their police tactical training plan. They had a prisoner of war camp set up with VRBs, interrogators. In other words, these were ex-Vietnam veterans that held various ranks and were professional interrogators dressed up in Vietnamese uniforms. And we had Vietnamese village.
Thoroughly indoctrinated to support the war effort.
Well, we was indoctrinated to go and no matter what our mission was to complete it. Nobody really ever defined what they were there for.
How would you say the Army has changed since you were on active duty?
I'd say it's changed too much for the worse. I was in, and believe it or not, they would change for the worse then. I didn't think any worse. Basic training, I think, is very important. I think, first off, we prepare ourselves for what's the purpose of having an Army or Navy, Marines or Air Force, or National, you know, any kind of National Guard units, reserve units. And the only way you prepare yourself is to prepare for the worse. It seems like our liberated organizations and groups, right? Don't get done. I think what they're doing is they're going to get more people killed along. When I went in for basic training, they eliminated machine gun fire, live machine gun fire. And without question, there were several people that got killed. Very unfortunate. But in the same token, it's it'll never be perceived on how many people have been saved by the fact that went through a lot of machine gun fire and too, by panning, you could also set up a chain reaction, mm-hmm. which would cause a wave of people to get killed. So, I mean, common sense dictates that it definitely needed to be there. And also, too, we have illusions for TV programs and so forth, how battles are fought and won. And the only real perspective you had was when you went to the military. And I think it's very important to know what the sounds are, how to react to those particular sounds, what to expect when it's kind of sound. But not only the sounds, but you've got to be able to feel. Well, as close as you could get was the simulators going off of dynamite explosions that you used all with a live fire. And of course, what I was thinking was always 4 feet above the ground, only to stand up using good shape. But you learn how to crawl, you learn how to keep low. So that was the whole purpose of the program. But luckily, other than that, I think it has to be hard, it has to be tactical, and it has to be I think you have to push beyond your endurance. In other words, you have to know within your own self that you can do it. You gotta have your own self-respect, and the only way to do that is if you are pushed beyond your endurance. No question about it, there's people lost. Same token, we're talking about war, right?